Hello and welcome to another episode of Foxhole Companion with me, Dan Stewart.
And me, Simon Rance.
Simon, what would you rather? Be fighting in like 110 degree heat in the desert or fighting in like minus 30 degrees in the snow?
Well, neither sound very appealing.
Well,
and
I mean,
that would not be the vacation of choice. But if I had to make a decision on that, the silly romantic side of me is thinking snow.
Ugh.
While my brain is saying, don't be an idiot, go to the desert.
Yeah. Lots of ways to die without ever being shot or bombed or hurt, really, isn't there, in both of them?
Yes, totally.
The reason I ask, dear listeners, is we are now making a shift. It's mid-1941. Yeah, right. We're
in
1941,
we are,
aren't we?
1941.
Jesus. How did we make it that far?
I don't know. And still be talking.
I know. We're in mid-1941 and we're in North Africa, Simon.
Yes. Finally, we're out of the watery depths of the Atlantic for a little while anyway.
And toffs at sea.
Yeah, exactly.
And toffs in planes.
Yeah.
We're done with all of that. And here we are in North Africa with a rather good film.
Well, I mean, yeah, an excellent film. We are today talking about the 2008 movie Tobruk. Now, of course, there are many, many Tobruks.
So many.
There's the Rock Hudson Tobruk.
That's it.
There's the Desert Rats.
That's it.
There's the Rats of Tobruk.
Yep.
But this Tobruk, made in 2008, is about the Czech army. And it's directed by Václav Mahul, who went on to make the 2019 World War II masterpiece, The Painted Bird.
Oh.
Now, Tobruk is not quite The Painted Bird, but it's so good that I think it's about half hour too short. And that's a rarity.
Mm. So neither of us fell asleep.
No, which is good, because we've watched many films which are about an hour and a half, but felt like three.
Yeah.
Well, this flies past, and the performances are amazing, especially Peter Venek as Private Lieberman. He is tremendous.
Yeah. They're all good.
They are good, yeah. They are. They're all excellent. There is one corporal who is a real nasty piece of work, but if the performance wasn't as good as it was,
it would have been caricature, wouldn't
it? Yeah, so that actor is Robert Nabrensky. He is brilliant in the film. It's a group of Czech soldiers, and we start off with the two leads, but really the whole regiment's pretty much evens.
Yeah. Well, before we get started on the film,
right?
Let's do a little history.
Okay.
I feel like we should just sort of explain where we are, because this is quite a radical shift. I was saying during the film, when we were watching it, that actually this isn't technically our first time in Africa, because, of course, The Way Ahead with David Niven ends there.
Right, okay. But we chose that, obviously, because it's about
the
conscription.
And it's the start of the war, and the conscription of the everyday every man in Britain into the armed forces.
Yeah.
And of course, if you remember it, we really liked it, didn't we?
Well, The Way Ahead?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's excellent.
And of course, it ends quite dramatically with the entire company sort of charging into the smoke and the fog and dust of battle and never to be seen again, and that's it.
Yeah.
This is all set in Tobruk. Now, as Simon pointed out, it's complicated. We had to really do a lot of homework to work out what Tobruk film we were going to do first and in what order we would review them, because basically until the end of the war, Tobruk was a constant battle, and it changed hands several times, and it's confusing. Well, at least I'm very easily confused.
Well,
the
timeline is confusing, isn't it? Because also, if, you know, regarding the timeline of these movies is confusing.
Yeah.
The problem is, of course, is that I suppose when they made so many World War II movies, it's very vague, like some of the timings of them. It's just like, oh,
yeah,
it's between 41 and 43.
Yeah.
You know, because
yeah,
that's the Desert War.
Yeah, so the ones that aren't specific battles, it can be hard to pin down exactly where they exist in time.
Yeah.
especially when it comes to Africa, which was basically a battle that lasted from 1940 to 45. So, why Tobruk? Well, Tobruk is in Libya, which was an Italian colony prior to the war. And the Italians used it as a jumping off point for invading Egypt. And the reason why Tobruk was important was it had a deep sea port that even if it was bombed would still be accessible to shipping, and therefore was an excellent location of resupply for any successful campaign in North Africa. Hence its significance. So Tobruk was captured by the British, Australian and Indian forces on the 22nd of January 1941 from the Italians. Whereupon Italy called on her German ally, who sent over an army, now called the Deutsche Afrika Korps, or DAK, under the leadership of Lieutenant General Erwin Rommel, of whom we will undoubtedly hear a lot more. He drove the Allies back across North Africa to the Egyptian border, which left Tobruk isolated and under siege. The defenders of the fortress of Tobruk consisted of the Australian 9th Division, the Australian 18th Brigade, and some British tanks and artillery, and is consequently the source of the Rats of Tobruk film that we will be doing next. The Aussies were then resupplied and reinforced by the British 70th Infantry Division, the Polish Independent Carpathian Rifle Brigade, and the Czechoslovakian Battalion, which is the source of this film, today's film, Tobruk. And the siege lasted until December, when Operation Crusader pushed the Deutsche Afrika Korps and the Italians back across North Africa. However, Rommel's second offensive took place in May and June of 1942, whereupon Tobruk was taken back after an outflanking attack on the 21st of June 1942, which captured the largest number of British Commonwealth troops since the fall of Singapore earlier that year. 80,000 soldiers were captured, whereupon Rommel was promoted to General Field Marshal, and was the youngest in the Wehrmacht to achieve this rank. Tobruk remained in Axis hands until the 11th of November 1942, when the Allies recaptured it after the Second Battle of Al Alamein. You still with me? Stay there, folks, because honestly, it does become clearer. And the Allies recaptured Tobruk, and it stayed in Allied hands for the remainder of the war. There you are. So it's strategically very, very important, which is why it was so fought over and captured and recaptured.
Got it.
During the war.
And why there's so many movies about it.
Exactly.
Well, because obviously it's very much an international allied thing, Tobruk. You know, there's Czechs, Poles, Anzacs, so New Zealand and Australians,
yeah, exactly.
Brits. You know, it's the job lot. And
even by the end of it, you then have the Americans in there as well, which is why you've got films of Rock Hudson.
And of course, on the German side, well, so there's Germans and Italians, but on the German side with the Afrika Korps, you've got Rommel.
That's it.
So, you know, there's the mysticism of Rommel about it as well. Yeah, you might have to excuse the odd sniffle. We've both got stinking colds.
Yeah,
but we're not going to moan about it.
No,
not like the soldiers in this film.
They do
who don't stop moaning.
God, they've been around. Maybe just by mere fact of being an ally of the British forces, you just become a right miserable git.
Well, that's weird, isn't it? Because like we've watched so many films when you've got the moaning Cockney or the moaning Northerner.
Yeah.
Of generally whilst at sea. Well, this one very much on the land, very dry land, and they're Czech, and they can whinge as well. But saying that, we're talking about having a sniffle cold, and they're stuck in some of the worst temperatures and conditions known to man. I mean, there's just a couple of moments in it, like the sandstorms, which can last days, and there is just one line before you go back to
history. You're going to say,
and it's just I'm paraphrasing, but one of the privates says to the tent whilst they're all barricading themselves from this desert storm, is that Arabs say that if a sandstorm lasts more than 3 days, you're allowed to kill your wife because it can drive you that insane.
Excuse me. Oh, my God.
But at the same time,
I thought you were going to say the line, which I also loved, when they're sheltering from yet another sandstorm, and one of them grumbling, miserable soldiers says, "When I get home, I'm going to erase the word sand from every dictionary I can find."
Oh, yeah. Now, he's tremendous, that guy.
Yeah.
So that brings us to the movie. And we sat down and watched this together on a massive screen with fantastic sound. And if you can see it on the biggest screen possible, and with some excellent surround sound, I highly recommend it, because the sound of the desert and the wind is incredible. The sound design of this film in general is awesome. The cinematography is awesome. The acting is incredible. The writing is incredible. It's just a bit short. Now, the violence in it is shocking, right? Yeah. So
it's Saving Private Ryan sort of levels of really graphic violence, isn't it?
Yeah, it just simply doesn't mess about. It holds up a mirror to the situation and shows us, like, just how difficult. I mean, there are so many uncomfortable moments, and I'm not saying uncomfortable to watch, but just these people are put through the mill, you know, and to the point where when they first arrive, and they're hunkering down, they're drinking salt water because it's the only thing they've got. And it's like, you know, that's the start of how it's going to, you know, of things to come.
Yeah.
It is misery.
Yeah.
They have, you know, their situation is someone has a small saucepan of water. Therefore, they can pour that on someone else, and that's a shower.
Yeah.
You know, and they probably get that once a week, you know, I mean, at the most. Yeah, the violence, as I said, is shocking, because we normally do a thing called the Best Death Award, which I think we're now getting to the point where we might have to drop, because, I mean, there is one in this film,
but it's
definitely not to be celebrated as a laugh.
Oh, God,
you know,
no.
No. We're not going to give it away. It's something, because the shock of it happening is very much part of the whole atmosphere of the film. At any moment, they are under a barrage of attack. Any single moment
of their lives, they could be killed instantly and violently.
Yeah. And if it isn't by the Axis, it's by the desert.
Yes.
Scorpions, sandstorms, which look like tsunamis. I mean, it's just
relentless heat. It is probably one of the most hostile environments you'd ever be put in and forced to fight.
Yeah.
It's just, and I was saying this to Simon, because of course because they're, even though they're Czech forces, they're British Empire forces, so to speak, they're wearing British military uniforms. So they've got that wool tunics.
They're like the sort of like worsted cloth, isn't it?
Oh,
it's
can you
ridiculous.
Imagine?
I know.
The film starts with, in a very clever way, in that, I guess you could say it was almost a little sort of stereotypical, where as a great plot device, you're introduced to the story by two characters being introduced to it.
Yeah.
So we have two new recruits who are still in their civvies on the back of a truck, driving to a training camp, and these two characters are our heroes for the film.
Yeah, and their names are Yuri Pospíšil and Jan Lieberman.
I'm going to leave all the Czech pronunciations to you, Simon, because you're sort of Eastern European, aren't you?
Sort of. That's brilliant. I'll give it my best.
Yeah, Private Jan Lieberman is Jewish, and from the second that he and announces his presence and introduces himself, it's just anti-Semitic joke and jibe after...
Well, I mean, it's...
One of the first lines of the film is somebody calling him Jew boy.
Yeah, well, that's Corporal Koshak. His character is the mean and nasty one. And back in Czechoslovakia, he was a policeman, which, you know, tells its own story. So anyway, he's very much, I mean, he's a borderline fascist on the side of the Allies. He's clearly a racist. That's
one of the characters actually says, after he does something really unpleasant, is they say, well, at least he's on our side.
Yes, exactly, because they're all terrified of him.
He's horrible. And he's really got it in for the two new recruits.
Oh, yeah, and specifically Lieberman. But what a performance from him. That's Robert Nabrensky. Absolutely brilliant.
Do you want to talk a bit about the director?
I think you should. Yes, I do. So, Vladislav Mahul.
Yeah.
I've already spoken about The Painted Bird, which I think is one of the best films about the trauma of war ever. Apart from that and this, he's not done too much. I mean, he's done some acting work as well.
Yeah.
Lots of production. There isn't a whole lot to talk about unless you've got a bio on him.
No, it's just that I think he's quite an important director. Here's an interesting thing. I found similarities, and I think I mentioned this while we were watching the film. There's one sequence with the other new recruit, Private Yuri Pospisil. Yeah, who's just sort of gazing upwards at the sky, and in that moment, it really resonated with me and reminded me very much of The Thin Red Line, Terrence Malick's film. And I think there's a lot of Terrence Malick in this film.
Yeah.
A focus on not just war and not just the characters in the war, but the environment, literal environment that they live in. So like Simon said, the sand and the heat is almost like another character. The insects, they're close-ups of insects crawling over the sand dunes. Scorpions. There's not a single shot of a soldier whose face isn't covered in flies.
Oh, it's just grim.
And that sort of primal, elemental force of nature, I found very reminiscent of Thin Red Line.
Right, okay. I see what you mean. I mean, I don't wholly agree, because I think... But I think Malick's take on environment is always very poetic. And it's always about look how unfair we are to nature.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like there's a bloody war going on in the middle of all this beauty.
Yeah.
And it's the same with the hills in Austria in A Hidden Life. You know, it's just like, what is wrong with humanity?
You know,
I think that's how his stuff's used. I totally get what you're talking about regarding the environment being a character.
Yeah.
That is very similar to Malick. And it is, and in Tobruk, that's very much the case. There is so much wonderful cinematography in the film, from what you were saying, the close-up. Also, that amazing shot of Pospisil's eye when he falls asleep, and you see the stars in his eye, and then you see the sunrise in his eye. I mean, that's just amazing.
Yeah.
The cinematographer is Vladimir Shmutny. And I was also talking about the sound design and the soundtrack, and the music is by Susan Dayim and Richard Horowitz.
Yeah, it's beautiful, very haunting soundtrack. It's a film that you don't really want to do a plot about, because fundamentally not very much happens. It's more a character study of these soldiers stuck in this one trench. They never go anywhere else. And they're trying to defend it, and there's a sort of middle section where they fended off an attack, and they're really pleased with themselves.
Yeah.
And it's the only time, by the way, and we've said this about other films as well, and I think it works quite well, where the enemy threat is suggested rather than literally seen. So you don't have it's a neat way, Simon, of avoiding your stereotypical Nazi.
Yeah, exactly, and brilliantly done. Very similar to Westerplatte in that respect.
And we mentioned this several times whilst we were watching it, didn't we?
Yes.
So that the Germans at best are just figures running in the distance that they're shooting at, But it's great because it just means that you don't have somebody being like, where are your papers? And all that sort of ridiculous
Well, it's so much more daunting, the faceless enemy.
Yeah, and it's frightening because of it as well. But they fended off this one attack and they're sort of celebrating. And then a second attack happens, but this time with artillery, and they are blown to hell. And our co-hero, Private Pospisil, he legs it, basically. He can't believe that anyone's left alive, so he just jumps out of the trench and legs it. And there's a whole sequence of him basically walking across the desert.
And the soundtrack when he is walking through the desert, because like, I mean, he's probably walking to his death. He's sort of well aware of that. It's just like, right, I've no idea where I am. I mean, he might as well be on the moon.
Yeah.
And he's walking, and the music when he's sort of, when he's just like looking for anything at all, whether, you know, I mean, but it's so barren.
Yeah,
it's an amazing sequence. Really scary,
and he thinks he's done for, and he actually comes across a track, like a little dirt road.
Yeah,
and he just sits down, and sure enough, along comes a truck, driven by. Oh. I'm going to say this at this point: the British do not come out of this very well.
Well, so this is the second time Brits are in the movie. The first time they come is when they go out. When Pospisil and Liebman go on a night out, they've got a bit of leave. And they go out on the lash. And the first thing they see, and they sort of turn their nose up to, are two pissed up Brits kicking an Arab's horse up the arse and laughing about it. And it's like, but then you meet Kiwis and Aussies, and they're amazing.
Yeah, they're lovely. But the Czechs love them.
But the Brits come across so badly. And this, so he's sitting in the middle of the road, and along comes what, you know, says, oh, it's a military ambulance. And it's just like, you'd think, well, they're generally going to be quite neutral and nice people, aren't they? Very diplomatic. Out gets this bloke who's clearly not British. He's putting on a British accent because one minute he sounds Cockney, the next minute he sounds like he's from Manchester.
I know, it's really...
And all he does is drop F-bombs. He swears at Pospisil, he swears about his truck, he gets a puncher, he starts swearing about that. Everyone is an F and a Jeff. It's hysterical. And it's the only part of the film, actually, where you're pulled out of it and reality kicks in and you realise you're watching a film.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, well, it's a Czech film. So, I mean, God, I wish my agent had been in touch with them and said, listen, if you're looking for a really angry Brit... It was typecasting. I would have done it brilliantly.
It was so funny. He said that while we were watching it. I was just like, yeah, in fact, nobody could have done that better than you.
Miserable ambulance driver. Yeah, it's me all over. Anyway, he thinks he's saved when he comes across his truck. And inside the truck is two buddies of his.
Tony.
One's an actual buddy of his from the trench that they're in, and one's just from their regiment.
Well, yeah, who he met in training.
Yeah. And through talking to them, he realises that not only was everyone not wiped out in this artillery barrage, but they're still there and still fighting. So now he feels terrible because he basically ran away.
Well, yeah, he's all of a sudden he feels like a deserter. And prior to all this, we all know what the Czechs do to what they talk because they do to deserters. They're shot instantly, and that's described in the film. So he's kind of like, oh my God, I want to go back, help them, and see my friends, but also they're going to kill me.
Yeah, yeah. So he, when the truck gets a flat tire, much to the effing and blinding of the driver, his buddy Tony, who seems to be really quite badly wounded, staggers out of the ambulance and sort of just starts walking into the desert. And Giri sort of is trying to beg him to come back, and he basically collapses and dies. And the guy he remembers and recognises from training is a bit of a piece of work as well, isn't he? And they start to have a fight because he's basically saying, leave him.
No, because he wants to take his wedding ring.
Oh, that's right. He's trying to take his wedding ring off him. And Jiri's like, what the hell are you doing? They have a fight. He gets knocked out. And when he comes to, the ambulance has just left.
It's left him.
He's back in the desert again.
The grumpy Cockney Northerner has just driven off without two bodies.
Yeah.
So it's like, wow, what a scumbag.
Yeah.
And then Jiri does quite an amazing thing. Somehow, with, I don't know, a stone, manages to dig a grave for Tony, which is remarkable, really.
Yeah. And the bit where he just smooths the sand over his face.
Oh, that's dark, man. Really.
Anyway, he walks back to his trench, basically. Goes back across the desert, and his mates are all very pleased to see him. But, of course, Corporal Koshak wants him shot for desertion.
Yes.
And the sergeant, it was also really a good performance. Martin Nahalka, as Sergeant Borny, was... sort of sticks up for him and he goes, just leave him, all right? And they get him back to health. Other memorable sequences, I think, because I don't think we really want to tell the whole plot.
Well,
really.
We don't want to tell the end, that's for sure.
No, we definitely don't want to give away the end. But there's a sequence when we mentioned they're on leave and they've gone to this bar and they get befriended by a bunch of Anzacs who are top blokes.
Yeah, amazing.
Get them drunk. And give them a really good time. And they're obviously staggered out to the beach at the end of the night. And they're sat there. And then there's this... And again, this really reminded me of that sequence in Thin Red Line where Ben Chaplin is sort of lying in that river, looking up, yeah?
Mm.
So there's a cut from them sitting looking at the sea. And suddenly Jiri is underwater and you don't quite know what's going on. And then some hands come in and pull him out.
And it's the daytime.
And it's daytime. His buddy Jan is basically pulling him out of the sea where he's drowning and resuscitates him. But the sort of slow motion sequence of him underwater is really odd. And quite jarring, isn't it? It's like a really odd sequence.
It would be weird if it's down to poor editing because the rest of the film is immaculate. So I don't know whether it's supposed to be there on purpose and we're missing something. It's some sort of transcendental message it's just not very good. It's not very well done. Who knows?
Maybe it's some form of rebirth. I don't know.
Maybe.
But this idea of basically being revived keeps sort of happening through the film, I think. Anyway, it's a sort of theme that you see. So,
well, specifically to him, right?
Yes, specifically to him.
To Jiri Pospisil, because
and people being hurt and being fixed, and you sort of get a sense in a quite gruesome way of how they go about, you know, fixing each other up. There's not much that they can do for each other in the middle of the desert, and you see flies crawling on wounds.
Oh,
and
man, yeah.
It's really horrible. I mean, and then, of course, there's the one sequence which we don't really want to spoil for you where it is probably one of the most brutal deaths in a war film that outside of Saving Private Ryan, you know, this first 20 minutes. It is absolutely shocking because it happens out of nowhere.
You'll know exactly what we're talking about when you're watching it. But just do me a favour, foxholers. When you are watching this movie, make sure the kids aren't up, okay?
Yeah.
It really isn't one for them. It's not like you're putting on Where Eagles Dare and, yes, 97 Nazis are killed by Clint Eastwood alone.
With one magazine.
Yeah, but that's totally acceptable for some weird reason. I've never been sure why. This isn't one of those films. This is... Yeah, it's horrific, you know, and it's really, you'll get what I mean.
Yeah.
What's also sort of so doom-laden about this Czech group's situation is, of course, back home, they're occupied, you know?
You know,
the Nazis are there. You know, back home, there's a huge divide because there's collaborators, so families are divided, friendships have been destroyed. I think it's Lieberman's family that own a factory.
Yeah.
And he's talking about it angrily that his father has collaborated with them.
Yeah.
You know, as a Jew.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah. So, all, and, so you have this whole thing. It's just like, well, this, there's nothing to go back to. And so that's, that kind of feels like that's where their bravery comes from, because their bravery is insane.
Yeah.
You know.
The end of the film isn't any kind of climax. There's no sort of huge battle that is either won or lost, which only reinforces this idea of desolation and sort of how alone they feel, this particular platoon of men, because you never see anyone else except when they're on leave.
Yeah, and the ongoing trauma. It's just like, it's over for us.
Yeah.
But that's it.
And the they're sent out on a... our two heroes are sent out on a sort of reconnoitre mission with the worst person they could be sent out with, which is the horrible, Kochak, psychotic corporal. And that reminded me of the Norman Mailer book, The Naked and the Dead.
Right.
Where you basically are following this platoon that's led by a lieutenant who's not very able and a completely psychotic sergeant. And so not only are they under threat from the enemy, but there's an even bigger threat standing right next to them.
Oh, that's great. That's a really, really good example.
I mean, even the point where they're taking a little break by a downed plane, by a downed German plane, and the corporal loads his gun, points it at them, and pulls the trigger. It just goes click.
Yeah,
and you sort of go, what a nutter.
He slightly takes out the magazine.
That's right.
And he just does it to scare them. I mean, he's that horrible.
Yeah.
But it never feels like a cartoon character. It's like, you know, it's like, ooh, the evil one. No, he's genuinely fine performance. In fact, you know, retrospectively, he's the best actor in the film, I think.
Do you reckon?
I think his performance, Lebrensky's performance, is amazing.
Just because of how mental he is.
Well, as soon as he's on screen, you're scared, you know?
Yeah, his presence is terrifying, and he doesn't
need to say anything. And he's not this big, burly guy. He's this small...
Oh, he's tiny.
Small geezer who's wiry, and he's just like... Oh, I don't know, he's just fierce.
Just horrible.
Yeah, you wouldn't want him over for Christmas dinner.
No, he would. You wouldn't want to be arrested by him either.
No, you certainly wouldn't. I imagine, yes, there was a few people on suicide watching his prison.
Yeah. The other theme that I find quite moving about this, one of the films I was reminded of again was Katyn.
Right.
Where you're incredibly aware of the fact that the Poles who were fighting, and the same in Westerplatte as well, they at that moment in time, they're fighting the Germans. And what you know, because you know history, is that not only are they fighting the Germans, they're then going to end up fighting the Soviets and then be occupied by the Soviets for years, decades afterwards. So these guys, when you watch them, they're out in the middle of the desert fighting the Axis forces. But then even when they go home... I mean, when was Czechoslovakia liberated? I mean, I know there was the uprising, which was horribly put down by the Soviets and the tanks. Czechoslovakia got their country back, basically, in 1989. So, you know, these poor guys have over 40 years of a not really particularly fun life in their own country. So even when they do go home, God, what they're going home to is
either. And it is a tragedy very similar to Poland.
Exactly. And so many of those Eastern European countries that, you know, first began their occupation under the Nazis and then in 1944 suddenly found themselves occupied by the Soviets. So is there anything else we want to say about the film, Simon?
Well, it's just that it's based on a novel and by a chap called Stephen Crane. That's probably worth a look. Do try and get a hold of it. If you're based in the UK, you can watch it for free on Prime.
Well, yep. you've got Prime.
Yeah, so it's not free, but you know what I mean. Or you can pick it up. You can pick it up on DVD off eBay, no problem. We don't have a copy to give away, but I do have a couple of things.
Yeah, we've got competition time, Simon.
Yeah, and so I've got three issues of Commando.
Way!
The amazing 63-page comic booklet is the best pocketbook, probably best way to describe it.
Those of you who are familiar with Commando, I mean, how long has this been going? Since the 1950s?
Well, it looks like it has. It's very hard to say. I'm not sure.
It's basically a bunch of short stories. Sometimes they're just one story.
No, they're all one story.
Oh, they're always one story?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's that's always the tagline. Commando, a complete 63-page action story.
Wow. It's so good. I loved these as a kid.
Oh, I still love them.
Well, they do, because Simon's got three of them right here. We've got...
Well, the first one we should start with, which looks a bit Tobruk-y...
Go on.
Is Bayonet Fighters.
Bayonet Fighters. Now, that's got to... Because they're on a sand dune. Look at that. It's amazing.
Yeah.
That's got to be, from their uniforms, Foreign Legion.
Yeah, they look like Foreign Legion.
Yeah.
Then you've got... Fog of War, which is on the home front.
Yeah, so you know what those are, right? In the Thames Estuary, right at the mouth of the Thames.
Oh, they're still there.
Yeah, they're still there. They built these sort of... If you imagine the machines from War of the Worlds...
The tripods, yeah.
They look like that, stood in the middle. There's about six of them, stood in the middle of the Thames. And they were basically an early warning defence... fort, if you like, against the Luftwaffe coming up the Thames to bomb London.
I do enjoy a watery fortress.
Oh, there's nothing like it, is there?
Then the last one we've got is called Ramri Massacre, and that's War in the East, 41 to 45. Now this one...
That's got to be the Burmese jungle
something,
isn't it?
It certainly is, and it is possibly the most violent comic about... comic I've ever read, barring Judge Dredd. It's just because it's the Japanese getting massacred, not just by Allied forces, but by saltwater crocodiles as well that just happened to be there. Which anyway, we've got three. We've got to think of...
Well, we're going to give one away per episode, right, Simon?
No. I think the first three to answer correctly...
We each get one.
Yeah, on the Twitters, and we'll do the same next month. But you know, I don't mind shelling out £6.75 a month on comics. I'm going to read them anyway.
So here's our question, Foxhole fans: what mythical creature from Czech and Jewish folklore protected the people of Prague under the occupation of the Nazis? It's a one-word name. There you go.
First three to answer correctly gets a copy of
one of these fabulous issues of Commando. We'll put the pictures of those, just to whet your appetite, on our Twitter page and on our Instagram page. Those of you who haven't signed up for those yet, you can find us under Foxhole Companion on both of those. And, so again, what mythical creature of Czech and Jewish folklore protected the people of Prague during the Nazi occupation? There you go. Because that's basically sort of, I guess sort of that's what the Jewish character in this film is about, really, isn't it?
It definitely has that vibe, because he's, out of everyone, he's convinced that he will be all right. He will not die.
Mm.
That he is under some guise of protection.
And he's also the one that tries... He has the boxing match with the horrible corporal.
Oh, he's got the most bottle.
He's basically the one trying to protect everybody.
Yeah.
You know, he saves his buddy from drowning in that weird sequence. He tries to beat up the corporal in a boxing match
to protect the rest of his squad
who are basically being put through the mill and of
then,
training.
And then at the end, which we can't really go into because it gives too much away, he tries to do that too.
That's right, he does. So he is the mythical protector of the platoon, really, isn't he?
Yeah,
the
interesting.
Jewish character. Interesting. Well, there you go. Well, that's our connection to our Foxhole quiz for this week.
Yeah.
Now, we've sort of gone about this in a sort of backwards way. As I mentioned in the little history, now let me make sure I got this right, Simon.
Uh-oh.
The Desert Rats,
mm-hmm.
the Richard Burton film,
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No. The Rats of Tobruk about the Aussies.
Yeah.
Defending Tobruk from the forces of the Deutsche Afrika Korps,
yeah,
and Erwin Rommel is technically the first film of the series. So we're going to do that one next. Okay. And then we're going to do The Desert Rats with Richard Burton and James Mason, which is basically the same siege. In fact, there's even one actor with the same character, which is really weird, in both of them. But The Desert Rats sort of then goes on to be a sort of commando raid as well. It's post Tobruk. So that's what we're going to do. That's going to be the order. So our next film is going to be The Rats of Tobruk, then The Desert Rats. We're going to hold off on The Desert Fox. You can see why we're confused.
Yes.
Because The Desert Fox is also James Mason playing Erwin Rommel.
Yeah.
But is sort of the story of the whole Africa campaign seen from the German point of view. Oh God, are there any more? Then there's also Tobruk.
There's Tobruk with Rock Hudson.
Yeah, which is when the second siege of Tobruk, when the Americans get involved.
And then there's Bitter Victory, again with Richard Burton.
Yeah, and...
which I believe is 43, though.
Yeah, so that's later. So, but... oh, my God. You're going to have to bear with us, because we're really confused.
And hold on.
Oh, wait, here we go.
Hold on. That means Play Dirty must be soon.
Oh, no!
That must be soon.
No, it can't be soon, because I'll tell you why. That's definitely not Tobruk. And because that sort of weird sort of task force behind enemy lines sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is there an American in it? Yeah, there is, isn't there?
I can't remember. I've not seen it for anyway. You hated that film.
Oh, I didn't like
it. I loved it. I loved it.
It was really cynical.
It is. It's great.
Anyway, so there's loads of... it's so confusing because there's loads of desert warfare films. There's the first battle of El Alamein. There's the second battle of El Alamein. There's two sieges of Tobruk. It changes hands so many times. And to be honest, we don't know what the hell we're doing.
Well, it's, I mean, that's a bit unfair, but...
well, I don't know what I'm doing.
No, I think you're doing as best as you can in such dire circumstances, Dan.
I'm very limited in my...
because, quite frankly, if you don't start a film that's based on historical fact with the date, and, the date and year...
yeah.
Like, knowing full well that there were two sieges of Tobruk... yeah. What are you supposed to do?
I know, it's very hard.
It's not as hard as being in Tobruk.
Well, only marginally. I mean, really, my poor brain has only got so much, and especially with when my head is full of cold.
Yeah.
And Vicks.
Yeah. The Foxhole Towers does smell like a boot at the moment.
Oh, God, help us.
Okay, so Dan, out of five, what are you going to give...
oh, I think I'm going to have to give it a four. I loved this film.
Okay.
I thought it was beautifully shot. I thought it was impeccably performed.
Yeah.
The sound design was incredible and the sound score was incredible. Yeah.
I'm going 4.5.
Well, there you go.
Am I allowed to do 4.5?
You're allowed to do 4.5.
Yeah, I think, yeah, absolute huge recommendation from both of us for this film.
I think we said when the credits started rolling, Simon, I think we both agreed that we enjoyed this as much as Westerplatte.
Yeah, I think Westerplatte is out of all the stuff we've shown, I'm going to go Westerplatte as number one.
Yeah.
I think The King's Choice was amazing.
Incredible film.
So that's second. And I think Tobruk is third.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
So
far.
I'm very surprised you've not put Convoy in there.
No!
Which is probably one of the greatest and finest films ever made.
Or Commando Strike at Dawn.
Oh!
Or what was that other one which I really didn't enjoy?
Oh, Confessions of a Nazi Spy.
Oh, that's so bad.
Confessions of a Nazi Spy was so bad it was actually good.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. I'm still in therapy. Okay.
All right then. Listen, Foxhole fans. We apologise for being so, both of us, so horribly sick again. Which is funny because when we did the Christmas special, we were both sick. It just goes around. Oh, these are your glasses. They're my glasses. Those aren't my glasses. We've got the same glasses. Our glasses look exactly the same.
Yeah.
So, all right. So there you go. You've got the quiz. Pictures of these incredible little comic... I was going to call them comets. Little tiny comic books. You'll love them.
Is that a thing? A comet?
I just made
that
up.
That's terrible.
Yeah, it's terrible, isn't it? Those will be on our Instagram and our Twitter page. Again, please, lovely Foxhole fans, if you do enjoy listening to us, and God knows, I don't know why you do. I don't even know why we started. If you do enjoy, please rate us, give us a good rating on whatever podcast medium you use, and also spread the word. I should say at this point, this is just to show how far and wide and how odd, not that the people who listen to us are odd, but how odd it is that some of the people who listen to us and how that happens. My daughter, who was in college in Paris, was chatting to a bloke in a bar, as you do when you're in college, who turned out to be a huge fan of World War II films. And she said, oh, well, you'd like my dad's podcast. It's called The Foxhole Companion. He's like, oh, yeah, I love that.
Wow.
How random is that?
That's nice.
So to the fella who was chatting to my daughter in Paris, welcome to the podcast and keep listening.
And stay away from his daughter.
And definitely stay away from
that. And also a big thanks to a local lad from around here who started listening, Richard. He's put it about, but I'm not sure that's the correct terminology.
No.
He has advertised our wares and got us a few listeners as well. So thank you very much for that, Rich.
Yeah. Spread the word, folks. It can only help. God knows how it's going to help, because we can't even work out what film comes next.
Tobruk!
No, not Tobruk!
Right.
So, until next time, where we bring you...
a Tobruky film.
The Rats of Tobruk! Hooray!
Yes, The Rats of Tobruk.
The Rats of Tobruk. You have been listening to...
The Foxhole Companion!